9 o'clock hour on a Bud Light Football Friday. Chuck Powell, former Mariner Bucky Jacobson, and Ashley Ryan with you. Coming up a little bit later on this hour, it's our last round of fact or fiction here in the mornings. That said, we have a lot of fun doing that, and we have a lot of fun with the Emerald Queen Casino, which also sponsors this segment with Greg Bell. And so we bring in our Seahawks insider, Greg Bell, to talk Seahawks 49ers and probably a little bit about the Seahawks big picture as well. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Did I just hear I was waiting an ad for Seahawks, the cash giveaway of if they score 6 touchdowns, you get cash for this or that? Is that 6 touchdowns of the year, the entire season?
Wow. Yeah, that's how we're going to start, huh?
Well, I was listening to it, and I said, 6 touchdowns? And I was thinking in my head, have they scored 6 touchdowns all year? That's can you imagine 6 touchdowns in a game?
Yeah,
that would be amazing.
It's been a while. I'll share with you something that I said to Ashley and Bucky last segment when we did our No Cliche Keys to Victory. I'm like, how about we just go all in on something? Either 8 guys in the box to stop the run, or you run it 40 times no matter what the results are, or you just let Russ cook. Let him throw every single down. Let's just go all in on something to try to change this pattern of performing ineffectively and then hearing Pete say that we didn't follow our game plan. Let's put together a game plan, go all in, come hell or high water. What do we got to lose at this point?
Well, yeah, the problem with that, of course, is they'd only get about 44 plays of whatever that was.
What's
and
different?
It still wouldn't be enough. We'd be looking different. Yeah, it'd probably be the same result. But, yeah, they need to convert on third down. They're the worst team in the NFL. This is how you get to 3-8. You're the worst time of possession team. You've run the fewest offensive plays, and you face the most defensive plays. And then that's a terrible recipe. Horrible. And we were talking yesterday to Shane Waldron, and Russell Wilson brought up for, I think, the 400th time how he operates better and up-tempo, and he thinks defenses have a hard time handling it, and he likes it. Well, we talked to Waldron, and to be fair to him, I said, well, it's kind of hard to be up-tempo when you're 3-and-out all the time. And they went out 3-and-out 5 straight drives.
Yeah.
That's the only NFL team to do it, like I said yesterday. They've done it twice this season. They've actually done it in the last game Russell Wilson won 2 months ago against the 49ers. So it's another example that Waldron has not done and been able to do any or very little of what he designed his offense to do because they're not on the field and they're not sustaining drives. You can't go no huddle and up tempo when you're 3-and-out and only have 49 plays in a game. So you're going to hear that a lot about, well, we should have Russell Wilson just go no huddle and run the show. Yeah, you can't do that when you're just 3-and-out and your defense is on the field for 41 minutes a game.
Well, I mean, how much blame does the defense get for the fact that the offense sits on the sideline for 5, 6, 10 minutes at a time with these long bend-but-don't-break drives?
Well, yeah, it's hand-in-hand, Bucky. You're right. They have to get off the field on third down to give the offense the ball back. Problem is they give the offense the ball back, and in 3 plays, defense is back on the field anyway, whether they stop them or not. The Seahawks had 3 consecutive 3rd-and-1 stops against Washington. Very hard to do in the NFL. They sold out, which they rarely do. They sold out against the run on those plays. They figured out and really give Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. credit for, we talk about coaching adjustments and coaching decisions. They figured out that Ron Rivera said, we're just going to run the ball conservatively, 2 o'clock, shorten the game, and we're not worried about punting on 4th-and-1s because Seattle's not going to drive down the field and score. So the Seahawks reacted to that and started to overload the box and blitz on run downs, and that's why they got the 3 3rd-and-1 stops. But it was somewhat of a insult what Rivera was doing, but at least the Seahawks adjusted to that, and that's how they got those 3 3rd-and-1 stops. When it's a more balanced game and teams aren't doing what Rivera did, it's been a challenge more for Seattle to get off the field on 3rd downs than that.
Greg Bell is with us, our Seahawks insider from the Tacoma News Tribune, joins us most every day at 7 o'clock to talk Seahawks football here on Chuck and Buck in the Morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. He didn't yesterday because he was a part of our roundtable from 8 to 9, and we spent the most amount of time on Russell Wilson, what's wrong with Russell, the future of Russell. But I think the most interesting comments that emerged from yesterday's hour with the three of you were the comments about Shane Waldron and whether the Seahawks would move on from him, Russell away from the equation after this year. Do you really think he's coaching for his job here over the course of the next month and a half?
I do. I think that Pete Carroll wants to see he gives him the benefit of the doubt of that he's lost his quarterback and his number one running back, as we've talked about. He hasn't had D.S. Eskridge a lot. But he wants to see why he brought him here and what it can look like and what is this. And if there needs to be a fall guy or a change, the one that comes to mind is Waldron. It would be the easiest one to do without disrupting what they've done around here for 10 years. The downside, of course, is, as I mentioned yesterday, that would be the fourth offensive coordinator in 6 years. And you started getting into the Baker Mayfield Cleveland situation, and you start messing up your quarterback just because you're changing everything. Really interesting of Hugh bringing up Brian Schottenheimer, who maybe out of pride wouldn't take a job if the Seahawks offered him back, but he's not the main play caller guy in Jacksonville for a team that's got two wins, so I bet he'd listen if he was asked about it. I bet Russell Wilson would like that. If you want to appease Russell Wilson, bring back his friend Brian Schottenheimer, who had Wilson operating with the highest scoring offense in the league most of last season. It's a little bit of grass is always greener, like I said, and maybe it wasn't so bad with Schottenheimer. I still submit it wasn't so bad with Daryl Bevel. And of course, Daryl Bevel had a better offensive line, and he had Marshawn Lynch. But no doubt, this has not gone the way they hired Shane Waldron to do. No fast pace, no sustained drives, no running game, no getting the ball out quickly to mitigate the pass rush. It really hasn't. He hasn't done anything he was here to do. But knowing Pete Carroll and his loyalty, and he probably won't want to give up on Waldron at age 41 and his first time as a play caller after a season like this, he's probably going to look at more. Most likely, he's going to say, look, you lost your quarterback for a month. You lost your top rusher. Let's see if we can do this with everybody playing for you, what it looks like next year.
Yeah, and that makes sense, you know, if he can get everybody back to rocking and rolling. But, I mean, he's got Russell Wilson back, but it's not the Russell Wilson that he expects to have back. I mean, he's just not going through a lot of the – he's not doing the things that we're used to watching him do. I read an article yesterday, or maybe it was earlier this morning, who knows, but I that was talking about that they had 8 or 9 plays designed to go to DK Metcalf, and that yet they still only ended up getting him one catch. I mean, what is going on that is stopping this offense from doing it, whatever it is that Waldron, because I'm certain that he's not intending for the offense to look the way that it's looking.
Well, again, it's that he's not sustaining drives, so he can't use the breadth of his playbook. He can't run the variety of run plays that he wants to run when it's 3rd and 11 and they're constantly trying to just get a first down. That's the biggest thing. The 8 or 9 targets or plays toward DK Metcalf, Wilson is saying that they have double-teamed Metcalf and he's looked other places. Well, of course they're going to double-team Metcalf. He's a freak, and he's 1,300-yard receiver last year and is a Pro Bowl guy. And, yeah, they're doing it more this year than they ever have because of what Metcalf did last year. And that's what defenses are supposed to do. And it's offenses' jobs to counter and beat what defenses do. I would submit there are times that Russell Wilson should throw to a double-team DK Metcalf because Metcalf's still going to catch the ball. But he's risk-averse to do that quite a bit, and he's not always going to do that. And in his mind, he's, well, if you're going to double-team DK Metcalf, I can throw to Tyler Lockett, I can throw to Gerald Everett, I can throw to Freddie Swain. So I understand that reasoning, too. But Waldron admitted yesterday, we got to get that guy the ball, Metcalf. He said, we've got to be better as a staff, we've got to get better as an entire offense, and we got to get him the ball. Look for them on Sunday to almost steady diet him. I mean, just throw him the ball early for the sake of getting him involved in the game. But I would expect 4 or 5 targets in the at least in the first half, if not the first quarter, to get him involved. It might get to the point that he's just going to play in the dirt for himself. He hasn't shown any frustration of that, I will say. It's not like I could see him pouting and yelling, and I've watched him on the sidelines and in between series, and there's no outward signs that he's not dealing with this very well, but it's a product of everything else that's wrong with this offense that you don't get DK Metcalf a target until late in the third quarter of a game.
Greg Bell is with us, our Seahawks insider. You can follow him on Twitter at GBellSeattle. Well, the 49ers' primary weapon, they are getting the ball too, but he's not going to be available this weekend. I mean, Deebo Samuel was having an all-pro season. And when I say all-pro, that's like the top three receivers in the National Football League. And then they turned him into a running back. So all of a sudden, right, he went from all-pro receiver to maybe an MVP candidate because he's willing and capable of doing apparently everything for the San Francisco 49er offense. And so to not have him on offense and to not have Fred Warner on defense this weekend, what does that do for the Seahawks' chances?
Well, it helps them. It definitely would.
I assume that.
I won't come out and unequivocally say that means they're going to win the game, but it just helps them. They're going to run anyway, whether Samuel's there or not. And that's the danger of, okay, Deebo Samuel's not there, that means someone else is going to get the ball. Kyle Juszczyk's still there. They're going to run, and they're going to run it in a way that the Seahawks haven't seen all season. Jimmy Garoppolo is a much better quarterback when they run the ball. We've seen that time and again when the Seahawks play them. So, frankly, the Samuel loss doesn't, to me, change San Francisco's offense or approach or Seattle's task. Fred Warner is different. He's a very good, maybe the elite, the heir to Bobby Wagner as an inside linebacker. There's some rumblings in the Bay Area that he hasn't had as good of a season this year before he got injured. But he still is the center of that defense, and they have a very formidable front defensive front seven with Bosa and Armstead and all those guys. But Warner is a guy, he's a very sure tackler. He's fast. He gets outside for a middle linebacker, much like Wagner did, especially early in Wagner's career. He does a little bit of everything and everything very well. If they have anybody else in the middle that doesn't do as many of those things, they will be changed on defense. He's that impacting. Look for Seattle, if Shane Waldron can get a first down or two, to try to exploit that by stretching San Francisco's defense side to side, maybe more crossers, maybe more tight end targets, although they have done the tight ends more here in the last few weeks. Things that would exploit a middle linebacker not being the best guy in the defense anymore.
Gee, they signed Adrian Peterson. Did they by chance find a time machine that they can turn back time and make him the running back that he once was?
No, they didn't. Sorry.
Oh, boo.
Franco Harris was not available, which is why they signed Adrian Peterson. They, you know, he looked, first of all, a lot taller than I thought he was in person. He's very tall, and he's pretty sleek for a 36-year-old, although 36 is relative. It's not that old, I guess. But it's certainly old for a running back. And NFL, he's in his 15th year as a running back. He's going to the Hall of Fame, and he's the fifth most yards ever. I mean, he's one touchdown away from tying Jim Brown. He's tied with Walter Payton in total touchdowns right now. The accomplishments he's made, but 15 years as a running back in today's NFL, that position is the shortest, has the shortest shelf life of any in the NFL. You, on average, only play 2.6 years if you're a running back. Chris Carson can tell you about the longevity issues of a running back. And this guy, Adrian Peterson, has done it for 15 years. Now, the last couple, he hasn't played much. He only played 30% of the snaps for Detroit last year when he gained 700 yards, or about 600, and scored 7 touchdowns. He was only getting about 30%, or I think, I can't remember the snaps over 3 games, but it was only 82 yards for Tennessee before they released him last month. But he certainly doesn't look like he's just been doing tailgate parties at college football games, which is what he was doing when the Seahawks called. So why is he here? I'm still asking myself that, and I asked Pete Carroll that. Carroll said he's here because they want to win this game, which is weird when you're 3-8. I submit that Josh Johnson would be a better option to see if he's in their future beyond this year. The rookie they called up from the practice squad last week or Monday night against Washington didn't play an offensive down at all. He was only on special teams. with as beat up as they are at running back, although Travis Homer and Rashad Penny did come back to practice yesterday, but they are not certain to play on Sunday. Carson, of course, is already out. Alex Collins has been playing hurt for pretty much since he took over for Carson in October. Why not try Josh Johnson and see if he's a running back you could count on and be like a Thomas Rawls, somebody, an undrafted rookie out of nowhere? Can he help you? Adrian Peterson's not going to be on this team next year. Why is he here? And again, one is that Carroll said he wanted to win this game. And the second thing is he's been trying to get Adrian Peterson on his team for 20 years. He recruited him out of Palestine High School in Texas, tried to get him to come to USC. Peterson yesterday mentioned that it was between Oklahoma and USC, but because Oklahoma was closer to home in Texas, he chose Oklahoma, and of course the rest is history. So Carroll has been trying to get this guy for 20 years, and it's kind of odd that he finally gets him at the end of a 3-8 season, and when Carroll's 70 years old and brings him on. Why would Peterson accept a practice squad contract from a 3-8 team at age 36? Why don't you just stay home, chill, and watch football and hang out? Well, he wants to play for somebody, obviously. And when he told the story that he was getting called during a tailgate party at the Oklahoma State game in Stillwater on Saturday, that told us, oh, well, he took the Seattle offer because it's the only one he had. And whether it's the practice squad or not, he signed. I expect him to be activated. What I saw yesterday and what I was talking to people about, what he looked like and how he could fit in, he's probably going to play on Sunday, be active and added, promoted from the practice squad before the game.
Yeah, so for those that may be new to football and they tune in to watch Adrian Peterson, you're not going to see what you would have seen a few years ago when he was one of the best we've ever seen play the position. So that's the that's the bottom line. All right, Greg. Well, thank you, man. We appreciate it. Enjoy the game. We'll check in with you on Monday.
Ashley, thanks for the share interlude. I appreciate
you're
that.
You're welcome.
Happy weekend. Thanks.
All right, Greg Bell, our Seahawks insider, joining us here this morning. Coming up next, we play Fact or Fiction. Sports Radio 950 KJR. Yeah, Ashley, I know that you got hidden messages with your music, and you get a real kick out of it.
Yeah.
I don't know where you're going with this one.
We got to have faith that we're going to finish the Fact or Fiction strong.
All right, I got
it
now.
Yeah. It was a reach.
I got thrown off by If I Could Touch Your Body.
I know. He really starts singing quickly.
Yeah.
And it made me laugh when I listened to it, so I just went with it.
Fact or Fiction, our final installment of Fact or Fiction here in the morning, coming your way at 7:35. Ashley will be entrusted with the pick, our final pick. I'm proud of us. We got off to as bad a start as you could possibly get off to, but we dug out of that hole. I think we're in second place right now. No shot at winning amongst the shows, but man, if we can finish strong and finish second, man, that is some perseverance. We'll at least win the Courage Award this year in Fact or Fiction.
Participation medal.
The Heart Globe.
What do we
give? What kind of trophies they give out over there?
I think it's a heart globe. I think you're right. Yep. It's got like an axis and it just spins around.
A perseverance pendant.
Oh,
something. Whatever they give away for people that are, you know, don't quit. That's what we should get.
Yeah. A non-quitters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ribbon.
But it's so much fun. We have so much fun with it. It's kind of sad. I mean, we don't take it to the end of the NFL season, but man, we've taken enough of the EQC's money. And I can't wait to give them some of mine. I really can't. I was telling Ashley, Bucky, before the show started, I don't know what it is. And maybe it was my years living in Vegas, but here being cooped up the last couple of years, I can't wait to go to a casino. I just want to go to the Emerald Queen Casino, have lunch, play a little bit, go have dinner, play a little bit. Get some drinks in me, sleep at night there at the casino, get up in the morning, have some breakfast, start playing again. That sounds so much fun.
I like that you said sleep at night.
Yeah, sleep at night.
Sleep at night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah, and then get up and play some more.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, okay, you're going to get a room. That's good because, the whole, like, sleeping at the table, like, in the casino itself, that's frowned upon.
That'll get you kicked right
is
out.
Is it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yep. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a couple of buddies that I can speak from personal experience who have,
why
I don't
do
know
so
if they call it sleeping or
up
passing out, but they do it. And it, like I said, it's frowned upon.
Have you ever noticed, have you met anybody in your life, Ashley, that has more, I have a couple buddies stories than what Bucky does?
Yeah, no, oh. No, he's well. His buddies. I think that's what we need for today. A contest where a listener gets to hang out with Bucky and his buddies.
They would have a good time, I'll tell you that. But my buddies, when life gets back to normal, Chuck, you will have to come out. Ash, you're invited as well, and have a little moment. Just one evening with the group of buddies that I have, and you will then have a few of my buddies, or my new buddies, my Bucky's buddies. They did this, and believe me, there's some interesting stories.
Okay.
I have half a mind right now to change story time on Tuesdays to, I have a couple buddies.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey. I got a lot of stories with my buddies, let me tell you.
Yeah. This way we can just throw unnamed buddies under the bus. Even if it's a story that's embarrassing about ourselves, we can just say, I got a couple buddies.
Yeah. You don't, and that way you're not fully saying it's about you.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So we're getting ready for our final fact or fiction pick for those of you this is your last chance to win that $1,000 weekly cash drawing. And then, of course, those playing for the $10,000 jackpot. Thank you. Not only congratulations for being in this position and not only good luck here down the stretch, but thank you because obviously you are loyal listeners of Sports Radio 950 KJR, even if you are just in it for the cash.
Yeah.
So we appreciate that, and we wish you all luck. Obviously, there can only be one $10,000 jackpot winner, but hopefully you jumped on this train at some point this year. You didn't give up on us because we gave you some pretty good games here down the stretch, and hopefully we finish with a bang. I got to have faith. I know that.
Yeah, you do. I guess it would be nice.
Faith.
If I could touch your body and do well at fact or fiction, those are the two things.
All right, well, let's play for the final time, single tear down my cheek.
Oh.
It's time for fact.
Just a fact, Jack! That's a fact, Jack!
Or fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
All right, Ashley, where are we going with it?
We are going to college football championship weekend.
There we go.
Michigan and Iowa.
Ooh, who are we taking?
Well, it's
11
not
points,
who
right?
We're taking.
Oh.
It's, are we taking the over or the under, Chuck?
I see.
Yes, because I do think Michigan is going to win. I don't know if they're going to win by 11, but I don't have a lot of confidence either way in that one. I do, however, think that the 43.5 seems low. Now, when these two teams last met in 2019, I believe the score was 10-3. So that you'd think, obviously, you've got to take.
That's less than 43.5.
Yeah, you've got to take the under. But these are very different teams than they were back in 2019.
Sure.
And they are scoring a lot more points offensively. And I don't know that they're going to score a lot more than 43.5, but I think they're going to score more than 43.5.
Yeah.
So I got to take the over because, as Jason Puckett would say, it's un-American to take the under.
You know what's American? Winning.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what we're worried about here. Michigan, what, they scored 42 against Ohio State just by themselves
exactly.
Last week. I like that. There, you don't see many college football games anymore under 43.5 points, and I don't think I think Michigan's been a really powerful offense all season long, and it's not like weather's going to interfere. If I'm not mistaken, it's in Indianapolis, right? So it's going to be inside. So that's not going to interfere in a December championship game in the Big Ten. So we'll go over 43.5. That's it. That's the final pick of the season from Chuck and Buck in the mornings. So if you agree with Ashley, over 43.5 points scored combined between Michigan and Iowa this weekend, then you're going to text FACT to 49451. If you disagree, you will text FICTION to 49451. If you're right, we enter you into that $1,000 cash prize drawing, the last one of the year. And, of course, you got to, if you're in for that $10,000 jackpot, boy, you got to be nails this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably coming down to it.
It is, you know? Don't screw this pickup.
Yeah. Solve gambling.
Yeah, just like you.
It's not that hard.
Yeah, that's right.
Clearly.
Turns out all you got to do is pick the right game every time.
And that's where we were wrong in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
We thought if you just pick the wrong game, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't know where I was. I was out in left field, and all of a sudden I'm like, hey, why don't I try making good picks?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then turn my whole season around with that philosophy.
Next year we'll start out that way.
Yeah. And damn it, I was going to take the Dallas Cowboys yesterday, too. And it had already been taken. Otherwise, I would not even be worried about this. I would be riding off into the sunset like John Elway after his second championship in a row. I would be just heading off with a victory. But now I got to sweat Oklahoma State on Saturday. All right. So there you go. You now have all the information that you require. Puck and Jim Moore will play again at 11:35. Thanks again. It's been fun. Mostly thanks to the Emerald Queen Casino for making this possible. We have a blast with them. They are a great title sponsor. And as I said, one of the first things I'm going to do is head to the EQC whenever I am able. All right. Coming up next on our program, we've had to turn it off, unfortunately, but maybe there is an upside to this offseason being interrupted by a Major League Baseball lockout. Sports Radio 950 KJR. O'clock. We got the eight top stories of the day coming your way. So we're about 13 and a half minutes away from the Ocho, the Friday Ocho. Boy, that's a beehive. It's just buzzing. There's so much activity going on around there. I wouldn't show up without proper headgear. I'll tell you that much right now. So Ocho coming your way on a Friday at 8 o'clock. But in the meantime, it's a Bud Light Football Friday, but I think we got to discuss this, Bucky. The stove has been turned off. Obviously, Major League Baseball, we discussed it quite a bit yesterday. They've imposed a lockout, the owners, the commissioner, on the players. Rob Manfred cleared up. This is just part of the process. No reason to panic at this point. But there have been other reports suggesting, yeah, it's time to panic because these two sides have been warring for 5 years, and they seem further apart on their issues now than they did even 5 years ago. So there's a lot of concern. There's no question about it. We are not going to end up getting that full-scale off-season where every day we're clicking MLB trade rumors over and over to find out if Jerry did anything. We're not going to get that here for the next month or two because all activity has been frozen. But I'm going to choose to look at this as glass half full, Bucky, because what we saw already, we got two players in before the deadline. We knew that December 1st, we knew this was going to happen. And we were hoping that we would get a significant signing. Well, we got a significant signing. We got an AL Cy Young Award winner in Robbie Ray. And we also pulled off a trade for Adam Frazier, which I don't think anybody could dislike that move. And so we got a couple things in. And the deadline probably created that. I mean, the off season has been getting longer and longer for activity to start in Major League Baseball every year. And this deadline, I think, kind of forced some teams to do some things. I think it forced some players to do some things. I think it forced some teams to do some things. And so without the deadline, we might not have had those two signings. And then, even though we're going to have this dry spell, it looks like, and hopefully shorter than longer, whenever it kicks back up again, January, right, Rob? Not February. January, when it kicks back up again, we could have a flood of moves that takes place, and that could be a lot of fun, and I suspect that the Mariners will be highly active in that flooding process. They'll be sandbagging it out there to keep the floodwaters from hitting the town because they're going to be very, very active in a very short period of time. So I think that I'm going to look at it glass half full. We got a really exciting before this deadline activity week, and I think we'll get another one at the end of the lockout. Before January, Rob, right? January, not February. January, not June, right? January. So we're going to get another one then, and so even though we'll have a drought, we're going to feast early and feast late, and that sounds like a lot of fun to me.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to be helping make sandbags because I want the flood. I want the flood to come flood over me. I want it to wash over me, and I'm A-okay with all kinds of moves heading in Seattle's direction. That's an optimistic point of view, and I like it. I'm hoping that that's the case. I mean, that's what they're hoping for by doing this preemptive lockout. It wasn't necessary. You could just have stayed at the negotiating table and So I'm hoping, I'm hopeful that, that the optimistic point of view is the way that it goes, where they don't just sit around and just wait for the other one and just, you know, play this pouty game and, well, I'm not going to talk to you. If you're not going to talk, if you don't agree to what I agree, then I'm just not going to talk to you anymore. I hope that doesn't happen, because if they do, if they get back to the negotiating table and figure out a couple of these differences and just iron out the kinks, then I think that there's a way where we get back sooner than later. And you're right, we will get kind of a mad dash to the finish right before spring training starts, because you're gonna hold out for, you know, this whole thing being put on hold. The off-season stove is being put on hold at this point in time. So I'm hoping that there is, reconciliation to some in some sense, and everybody kind of comes together and they find an agreement for the collective bargain agreement, and then we can get back to business as usual, and it'll just be kind of an overarching flood just across the Major League Baseball landscape.
Yeah, most important thing is to get a deal done, not delay spring training, certainly the regular season. That's the most important thing. Even if Jerry doesn't even make a move, we don't want it to be deprived of this upcoming year, because it should be a lot of fun here in Seattle, even if there's not another move coming. But the expectation is that there are several moves, and I think that it is such it's such an interesting concept. As long as we get to, we don't delay anything. Again, that's the most important thing. But I think that baseball might end up, and they might be wise to do this, they might implement every year, even with a good collective bargaining agreement, even when, players and owners are, feeding each other ice cream in the park. They feel so good about one another. I think that they might like this little flood of activity stuff that we just experienced and we could experience again before spring training starts. I think they might start implementing a signing deadline in the offseason to force that frenzied week that the NFL gets with free agency, coming out of the blocks with free agency, because baseball's offseason just lasts so long, and it's lasting longer and longer every year. If you could force a couple of pockets of, if you don't make any moves now, you got to wait until February 1st before you can make them again, I think that's something that could actually be very beneficial for the sport in the future.
Yeah, it could. I mean, any sort of changes to the way in which things are done, I think, is kind of inevitable, right? I mean, you kind of fall into a rut, and then next thing you know, everybody kind of understands how that rut works, and I think GMs are constantly on the move. Okay, what can we do that's going to, kind of take the other suitors by surprise, or will be in benefit for us to get the guy that we want and whatnot? This is kind of something that was kind of thrust into the whole mix, where everybody kind of had to deal with this wrench that was kind of thrown into the plan. And there's definitely going to be some benefits. I think there'll be some GMs that will actually come out of this whole thing and say, "Wow, that actually worked out in our favor." Hopefully, the Mariners and Jerry DePoto are one of those.
It's like intermittent fasting. And then when they have when you have that next meal, and it feels like a feast. It doesn't even matter. It could be like a ham sandwich at a convenience store, and you're like, "This is the best sandwich I've ever had in my life," because you were fasting. So we're forced into fasting on baseball moves here for the next month or two. But when we get to eat again, boy, it's going to be delicious. All right, coming up next, 8 top stories of the day for you. It's the Ocho on Sports Radio 950 KG.